Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores. You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Time to catch up from the Spanish news and El País. It's Melissa Kitson this week. Morning, Melissa. Happy New Year. I think we can still say it.
Yes, morning, girl. Happy New Year and Merry Christmas.
I wonder if there's a cut-off point officially when you can stop saying Happy New Year to people.
Well, I think it's my first time back since going on holiday, so it still counts.
I think you're absolutely spot on. So let's begin with a very odd story, really. This is a kind of an argument between central and the devolved regional governments over curfew times. I know that here in Andalusia, they've tried to move the curfew time back from 10 p.m. to 8, but they're waiting government approval. And I guess what that's what this is all about.
Yeah, so this is this is obviously what's happening now is as Spain enters the third wave of the pandemic, coronavirus cases are rising, and regional governments are sort of struggling to work out what to do next. You know, what new restriction can they introduce to curb contagion rates? And under the state of alarm, there are quite a lot of provisions for what they can do in terms of closing down bars and restaurants, setting perimeter lockdowns, and the curfew. But in terms of what is allowed on the curfew, it can only be between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. or 1 hour before or after that time. So, for instance, in Madrid, it's been brought down to 10 p.m.
Yep.
And that's the case in lots of different regions.
Sure.
But that's, not enough. A lot of the regional authorities are saying they want it to be brought down to 8 p.m. Castilla y León has already introduced an 8 p.m. curfew. And in País Vasco, they're talking about even setting it as early as 6 p.m.
Goodness.
Yes, very early. But in order to do this, so all the regional chiefs and the central health authorities will meet today and talk about whether or not this should be allowed and whether or not the state of alarm that's been approved needs to be changed to allow these provisions. The health minister, Salvador Illa, has said, His argument is that, look, there's the regions have enough tools at their disposal to curb contagions, and we don't really want to give them more power, I suppose, or more liberties to introduce, for instance, a home lockdown, which is also being brought back on the table by a few regions. So,
well, if you look at, for example, Valencia, they have just closed all hospitality businesses in the Valencian community, but they're allowing takeaway and pick up food service. Now, what's the point of bringing bringing a curfew back when there's nowhere to go. It's not like people can go out, for example, in Valencia after eight. So what's the problem? It's very odd.
Yes, I mean, this is a question, you know, and I suppose this is the government's argument that you can create a kind of de facto lockdown with the restrictions in place because, you know, as you say, this, you know, also with the limits on social gatherings, if you can only, you know, meet with X amount of people, maybe you don't, you know, your kind of desire to go out is, you know, is somewhat limited.
Yeah.
So there are these two kind of counter arguments, whether more restrictions are needed or whether, you know, really with what is already in place, it will be enough to stop people from, you know, going outside and, you know, meeting with other people and spreading the disease.
It's a weird one. We've got here in Andalusia, as have other regions, I think, kind of odd lockdowns now based on municipalities' level of positive PCR or antigen test per 100,000 people. So if it goes over 500, one set of rules come in. If it goes over 1,000, then another set of rules come in. And in our little municipality, which is quite low here, which is called Benavís, we thought we'd escaped all of this. We've now discovered that both of the municipalities which border us have now gone into lockdown. Oh. So we're effectively trapped anyway. So what's the point?
It's like, oh no.
Can't win either way around. So it's all a bit weird. And it's becoming more and more complicated for people to keep up with this because they're doing it now twice a week, you know, announcing it on a Monday and then bring it in on a Tuesday and then announcing it on a Thursday and bring it in on a Friday. But if you're announced already earlier in the week, then you've got to wait 2 weeks, even though your numbers have gone down. They can't expect people to keep up with this. It just is impossible to even if you're on the ball, as I, you know, as I think I probably am for what I do for a living, I'm bewildered by what we're supposed to be doing and when we're supposed to be doing it. And I'm sure I'm not alone. What's it like in Madrid, Melissa? Do people know what they're supposed to be doing and when they're supposed to be doing it there?
Well, in Madrid, I suppose because the government has taken quite a, you know, relaxed approach, there's not as much confusion. What there is confusion about is the, you know, there's a similar system where health areas which have an incidence rate above 500, they're subject to different rules.
Right.
But these are kind of health areas, like no one really knows what they are. You have to look at a map. It's
exactly.
Not like you say Salamanca or Malasaña, these kind of recognizable neighborhoods. It's these very particular, strangely drawn areas that, you know, might end at the roundabout at the end of your street and you would have no idea unless you checked the map.
Spot on. And that's exactly like our municipalities here. So ours for no reason ends up halfway down a road when it could have just gone to the bottom of the road and made it really easy. It's like they've taken a crayon and just gone, we'll just draw this thing here and we'll call that it, shall we? It's just, I mean, you know, there must be a reason for it. But the point I'm trying to make, and I think you probably agree with me, Melissa, the harder we make this for people to understand what it is we're supposed to be doing, the less people will comply. I think that's basically the fact.
Yes, no, that's you know, been an, a problem people have raised since the pandemic began. And, you know, hopefully with this meeting today, there might be some more clarity about the rules.
Well, let's hope they don't bring in standing on one leg because I'm just not going to do it. Now, this is a fascinating story. I saw this in El País and I thought, well, it's either bad luck or it's bad planning or a bit of both. But this is a Spanish Christmas gathering that brought down Belgium's most wanted drug lord, who they'd been after for a while. It's quite a story, this.
Yes, this is this story actually happened when I was on on holiday, and then I read it. And I was like, "What? What is this all about?" You know, was very intrigued by the headline. So it's about a man named Yannick, and he's a 33-year-old, and he settled down in a luxury villa in Costa del Sol with his family, his wife, his daughter, even his parents-in-law. You know, and I suppose to all accounts, he just seemed like another resident in Estepona. But little did they know, he was actually Belgium's most wanted drug lord.
Wow.
the police said he was an importer of cocaine shipments from Latin America. He also had ties to arms trafficking. So a very suspect character. But his presence had kind of gone undetected in Costa del Sol. It wasn't until June last year that they learned that he was there, and sort of the mechanism was put into, you know, was started to try to get him, you know, put behind bars.
Yeah.
So the Belgian police launched a raid in October. And they've, you know, this was going to be the lead up to his arrest, but his aides tipped him off. So they thought he was going to be in one house. They arrived and he was not. He'd moved from his beachfront villa to another house that was, you know, much further inland and much more difficult to detect. Mm-hmm. But that did not stop the police. They, you know, kept him under surveillance. And around Christmas time, they noticed that, you know, the family were loading bags and, moving to this house. And then he, you know, during this Christmas gathering, he popped out of the house on an electric scooter, and the police were there ready to capture him.
Wow. I bet, I wonder if they said Happy Christmas to him, as they called him.
Yes.
I wonder.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's now facing 15 years. So.
Wow. So he's gone from a local Estepona lockdown to a real one.
that's basically what's happening.
Absolutely. More on that in El País in English. And finally, I'm a Scot, and Scots are normally quite canny, but there's a guy called Hugh Borthwick who is a bit too busy keeping his eye on German warships to notice what was under his feet. What's this about?
Yes, this is an incredible story. So this is about a Scottish aristocrat named Hugh Borthwick, and he entered the British Secret Services when he was 25, and at the time he was living on Frail Island, which is, you know, off Murcia. And this particular island, Frail Island, was of, you know, very strategic importance, because from here he was able to see when German warships went to collect cargo.
Right.
And then he would tip the British services off, and they would sink the ship. But this was all a big secret. No one knew he was doing this. To the locals, he was this really debonair, you know, aristocrat, always really well dressed.
Wow.
His clothes were ironed. But he did kind of keep a distance from the English community there. You know, that said, he introduced rugby. He helped the people around him learn English. But all the while, he was, you know, looking out for German warships.
Wow.
And this story has become, become known to the public, because his housemaid recorded basically what he did during his life. And these recordings have since been uncovered. So she would talk about, his interactions with the British community, how he would go to bed early, how he would sleep with a gun under his pillow. And no one really knew why or what was happening with these peculiarities. But the story has sort of another twist, you know. So on the one hand, there's this kind of debonair Scottish aristocrat who's secretly spying on German warships. But now it's revealed that this island that he was living on is actually being excavated for Roman settlements and for a vestiges of a Islamic necropolis. So the island, I suppose, was seen for its strategic importance, but it's also home to all this historical treasure.
Wow, how amazing. Great story. Well, incredible. It sounds like one of those kind of movie stories, really, that there he was with all this under his feet all the time. He could have just taken the lot and legged it, and he wouldn't have had to work as a spy anymore. That would have been perfect for him. Wow, brilliant. More on those stories in El País in English. If you Google that, you will find it. Melissa, thank you so much. We will speak to yourself or Simon next week, same time. You take care.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, then. Bye.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.